in the ever below. There's no bugs. They're...
spiders.
Hawk says immediately.
There are spiders.
I pause. They're just spiders.
Not just spiders. They're great big ones. Terrifying creatures.
His lip curls, and he looks absolutely revolted.
I wish there weren't, but you need to be prepared for such things.
You say they're big? How big? Locke asks. Like the size of a plate?
Big as my thumbnail.
He declares in a grave voice, his expression somber.
Trust me when I say they're horrible.
My lips twitch, but I promise myself I won't laugh. While I hate a spider as much as anyone, I don't see how this camping excursion continues to help us. We're more in danger of mosquitoes and getting a cold from being rained upon than running into cave spiders. If you really want to teach us what it's like in the tunnels, we'd be better off indoors, don't you think? He shakes his head.
This is about...
I know what it's about, I protest, exasperated. All I'm saying is that there has to be a better way to teach us than to trudge us through a forest full of mud. Hawk storms over and plants his hands on his hips, looming over me. Meriden makes an alarmed squeak, but I only glare back at the Taurian. If this is an intimidation tactic, it's not going to work on me.
Do you have something you want to say to me?
He asks in a deadly voice.
Wife?
Yes. I lift my chin. This is madness. If you want to teach us how to move about in the tunnels, find us a nice dry basement instead and... I cut off as he puts a finger in my face. Put that thing away.
Aspeth?
He says, his tone full of warning.
I am your teacher. Magpie is your teacher. If we tell you to trudge through the mud for a week straight, that's what you're going to do.
I really don't think...
Tut!
The finger is under my nose again, raising higher with the sharp syllable.
You're not here to think. You're here to learn.
Now I'm the one making an angry sound. I'm not some idiot.
No, just a terrible listener. And you don't seem to like being told what to do.
He eyes me balefully, looking nothing like the heavy-eyed bull who fingers me to climax when we're alone.
I'm thinking you've picked the wrong line of work.
You're not here to think. You're here to teach, I snap back, using his words against him. Gwenna hisses between her teeth. Kip takes a delicate step away from us. Hawk gets in my face, his muzzle practically to my nose.
If you were a man, I'd turn you over my knee and spank you like a child, since you're acting like one.
I'm not sure why, but the angry flick of his tail hitting his thighs and the loom of him over me doesn't make me any madder. If anything, it makes heat uncurl deep in my belly. My gender shouldn't matter. His eyes narrow.
So you do want me to spank you?
Now we're both breathing hard. Hey, Locke says, I think I speak for all of us when I say, what the fuck?
Mind your business.
Hawk says, not looking away from me. I don't look away from him either. If I continue to meet him glare for glare, is he going to make good on his word? Is he going to turn me over on his knee and spank me, his hand on my bare buttocks, me helpless and splayed over his lap? Mercy, that should not be as arousing as it is. I blink up at Hawk, and I could swear I see a hint of red in the gleam of his eyes. Is it the moon making him act like this, or does he really want me? It's most likely the conquest moon, as he's drummed into my ears over and over again, and the realization dampens my arousal. I'm just convenient, Nothing more. Before I can come up with a response, there's a distant sound in the woods like that of branches snapping. We all turn, and then a voice calls out.
Ho! Is someone there?
Ho! Magpie calls back in greeting, cupping a hand to her face. Over here, by the stream. To my surprise, the pack I have on my shoulder slips. One of the straps falls away and I turn to grab it, only for the entire thing to tumble to the ground with a wet slap. The blankets, foodstuffs, dry boots and everything else spill out into the mud, and I want to scream in frustration. Just what I needed. Gwenna kneels down next to me, picking up one of my boots. You clumsy, silly thing, she loudly exclaims as the riders make their way toward us. I pick up one end of the strap, noticing it's been unbuckled. What the? Pull your hood up, Gwenna whispers to me. Do it now, quickly. There's an urgency in her voice I've never heard before. I pull my sodden hood over my hair, looking up at her in surprise. I reach for the boot, but she holds on to it, and her gaze meets mine. There's a warning in her eyes.
Greetings, greetings,
a man says in a cultured voice, his accent that of the north, like mine.
Is there a better place to cross this water? My Lord Barnabas's horse has lost a shoe and is too expensive to risk laming on the rocks.
I freeze, ice going up my spine. Lord Barnabas Chatworth? He's here? Gwenna gives me the boot, her expression firm as if to say, see? Oh, I see now. I take my time shoving things back into my pack, determined to make it last as long as possible. I wonder if I can get sick on command. Right now, my stomach is roiling enough that I wouldn't have to try too hard. Barnabas is here. Why? He's made it clear to me in the past that busy, dangerous Vast Warren holds no interest for him. Surely he hasn't come to retrieve me. The stream crossing narrows farther down the hillside, Magpie explains. You're heading in the wrong direction if you want things to get easier. Only gets wider from up here, but it ain't deep. If your horse can't cross this, you've got bigger problems. Hawk chuckles. Meriden and Lark do, too. I don't hear anyone else laughing, though, and my pulse pounds in my ears. Barnabas is here. I've been found out. Woodenly, I pick up a soggy piece of clothing and pause, panic rising in my throat. I'm going to lose everything. I'm going to be destroyed. Not only will my father and grandmother be in danger, but our hold will go down in flames. And Hawk, clumsy twit, Gwenna says in an exasperated voice. Let me help. And she kneels next to me and pulls everything back out of my pack. You're not going to be able to fit everything in again. Watch how I do it. Thank you, I mouth to her, squeezing my trembling hands into fists. The horses grow louder, the sounds of their hooves in the mud and the jingle of harnesses like death knells to me. I glance over, peeking out the side of my hood, and there are at least a half dozen horses around the edge of the stream, the men wearing a familiar livery. I recognize the house colors of their jerkins, the Chatworth hold deep blue with the bold yellow trim that stands out even to my bad eyes. One of the men is walking, leading a horse by the reins. And then, to my horror, Barnabas himself rides up, eyes the stream and turns to look at our group. I quickly hide my face again.
What is going on here?
He asks, voice just as cultured and haughty as I remember. I used to love how precisely he said each syllable, as if he were biting them. Now I know it's just a tactic to put himself above others, to show them that he's superior because he has holder blood. That or I'm still bitter about him calling me ugly. His words make me freeze in terror, though. I clutch my canteen tightly, a knot in my throat.
What do you mean, what is going on here?
Magpie's voice is an amused drawl. I imagine her with her hands on her hips, confronting him with that world-weary stare of hers.
What does it look like is going on here?
It looks like a religious ceremony of some kind.
Barnabas answers, his voice stiff.
Are you some sort of nature cult?
Gwenna snorts, a sound so low that only I can hear it. I want to be amused, too. Normally, I'd laugh at the idiotic suggestion that we're a nature cult. But I'm too afraid that I've been caught, that I'm going to be dragged back to Honori Hold in disgrace without a single artifact, that everything has been ruined.
Why in the five hells would we be a cult?
Hawk sounds annoyed. I can almost see the dismissive look that Barnabas would send in his direction.
You're all wearing the same clothes. It looks like a religious training program.
Your men are all wearing the same clothes. I hear Locke mutter loud enough to be overheard. Meriden giggles. Magpie shushes both of them.
It's a uniform. This is a training program for fledglings of the Royal Artifactual Guild.
I tense, waiting for him to remember my fascination with it, how I was always reading books about the greats of the guild, how I'd been obsessed with learning old Prelian glyphs.
Ah.
I wait.
That explains the colors. Carry on, then.
Barnabas says, as if we needed his permission. I slowly help Gwenna restuff my pack as the horses splash across the stream. When I dare to look up, they're on the far side of the stream, nothing but horse withers and Chatworth cloaks meeting my stare. They're gone. I'm still incredibly rattled, though. I'm shaking, and Gwenna puts a hand over mine as if to comfort me.
I don't think he noticed you, she whispers. He barely glanced in our direction.
Taking a deep breath, I nod. Then my stomach churns, and I realize I'm going to throw up the cold breakfast I ate a few hours ago. I barely manage to crawl away a foot or two before I'm puking in the mud bent over. When I recover, Hawk is looming over me, a heavy frown on his face. He hauls me up to my feet, brushing me off, and then cups my face in one hand, studying it.
What's wrong with you?
I manage a faint smile, downplaying the situation. I don't want him to realize why I'm so stressed.
It's nothing, just feeling a little ill.
He pulls his canteen out and pops the cork free, offering it to me.
Drink.
Turning, he says to the others,
We'll go back to town. Let you rest. We're pushing you too hard.
And then his gaze lingers on me. He reaches out and tucks a lock of scraggly hair behind my ear.
I'm sorry.
I just sip the water, feeling like the worst woman alive. I should tell him that we haven't been worked too hard, that I'm not sick because I'm overtired. I'm sick because the knot of anxiety in my gut seems to be growing larger by the moment. But I can't say anything. It never occurred to me that my two lives might collide, that someone from my past might show up in my present. And now I have no idea what to do if it happens again. 22. Aspeth, 14 days before the conquest moon. Hawk hired a nearby woodcutter to cart us back to Vast Warren that night, and we spent the whole next day catching up on sleep. The next morning, we head to the Guild Library. There, Magpie goes over the history of Old Prel and common types of artifacts that are found in the tunnels. Normally, I love this sort of thing. I love talking about the Prelian Empire with others, and nothing excites me more than artifact discussion.
but I can't concentrate. Barnabas's return hangs over my head like an executioner's axe. I've been woefully blind to the dangers here. Anyone who recognizes me could blackmail me. They could demand funds from my father, funds that aren't there. We could be exposed in an instant, destroyed in a heartbeat, and no one would do more than shrug. Their fortune was gone, someone would point out. Their artifacts gambled away. What did they expect? I stare at the book in front of me, not seeing a single page. It's a book on the pottery of Old Prell, and there aren't enough copies for all the students, so I'm sharing with Kip, who turns the pages with the sticky end of his tongue. The Prellian Empire was famous for its ceramics, and the sorts of things they enchanted the jars and vases with. I know everything in the book already, but I've never seen this particular reference, and part of me knows I'm going to regret being unable to concentrate. Yet every time I try to focus, I see Barnabas on his horse. I think of what will happen if he finds out I'm here in Vast Warren and not high in the mountains, safely ensconced in Honori Hold and weeping bitter tears over our broken engagement. He'll make a move if he knows I'm here. At home, we're surrounded by retainers and guardsmen who have no idea that our artifacts are gone. They blindly trust in my father's might. Their lives are at stake, too. Should I turn around and leave, then? Go back home and marry someone like Barnabas and reinforce our family's holdings through a connection? Or is it already too late, because Barnabas knows I'm here? If he lets that out, I'll be ruined. There's also a small matter of my Taurian husband, but I'm tackling one problem at a time. Even if I can't make our marriage work long term, I at least owe it to him to be here for the Conquest Moon. He needs a partner, though he acts as if any woman wouldn't be falling all over herself to get together with him in that mouth of his. Aspeth. I look up, startled. Yes. I grab the page to turn it, pretending like I was paying attention. My fingers encounter Kip's slithery, sticky tongue instead, and I squeal in horror. The slitherskin makes a choked sound, pulling back and putting a hand to his mouth with a wounded expression that reads, "How dare you?" "I'm sorry," I manage, embarrassed. "Could you repeat the question?"
"I asked if we were boring you," Magpie says.
Her graying hair is pulled back from her round face in a tight braid today, emphasizing a hint of cheekbones. She looks better than she has in the last while, though her hands still shake with tremors at times. Lark says this is a good sign, though. Hawk doesn't agree. He's still waiting for her to falter again. "Oh, I'm not bored," I exclaim, putting on my simpering noblewoman act and beaming at her. "I love Prellian pottery."
"Excellent. Remind me of the piece we were just talking about, and the common things to look for."
Her dark, heavy brows go up. I eye the page in the book in front of me. There's a drawing of a fluted, thin bud vase with a rounded flare at the base. Looking at it makes me think of Hawk, and the knot he's supposed to get at the time of the Conquest Moon. I stare at it, trying to think of non-phallic characteristics.
"Leave her alone,"
Hawk says, voice gruff at the back of the room.
"You know Aspeth's knowledge isn't a problem when it comes to artifacts."
I hadn't realized Hawk was even in the library with us. He must have joined after we'd sat down. I glance over my shoulder at him and see his big form stretched on a bench near the wall, his hooves sprawled out in front of him, arms crossed over his chest. He slouches like a man of leisure, ironic given that his guild coat is taut over his thick arms.
"If she's so knowledgeable, she needs to share with her companions."
Magpie's expression is unyielding.
"We don't have time to waste. Not now."
He straightens in his seat, hooves squarely upon the floor. Hawk leans forward, one hand on his knee as he studies Magpie.
What do you mean, exactly?
Remember when Lord Gent decided to go to war with that big coastal hold, and he called in a special request to the guild? We sent out teams of students fresh from the schoolroom, and only half of them made it out alive. But that wasn't a problem for Lord Gent, because he got the artifacts he needed, and quickly. We've a similar situation now. Lord Chatworth has asked for additional teams to be sent to the tunnels to look for artifacts. He's going to war, and he's willing to pay top price to do so.
I can feel the blood drain from my face. My entire body, actually. I'm just a numb lump of flesh, unable to move, to speak, to breathe. Chatworth Hold is going to war. I can guess who he's going to attack. I want to shoot a panicked look to Gwenna, but I don't dare turn around to meet her gaze. This is the nightmare situation I was dreaming of. Worse, even.
What does that mean for us?
Meriden asks.
Lord Chatworth's younger son is paying for additional teams to head into the tunnels. This happens occasionally with the guild. Sometimes a lord will need an emergency supply of artifacts. Whenever this happens, the teachers take any team of fledglings in that is deemed competent enough. It'll give you an edge when it comes time for your final exam.
And we're competent enough to go into the tunnels as a team?
Locke sounds openly skeptical. I can't blame her. I wouldn't think of us when I think of competence, but maybe we can find something good, something big, and I can claim it for Honori instead of turning it over to Barnabas. Maybe I can find something big enough to change our circumstances. After all, it was the Sphere of Reason that established Spartanos and the Guild after the Mansa Wars. If there's one artifact like that, there are bound to be others. Maybe this is where I need to be, after all. If we find something big, I can do my best to make sure it doesn't fall into Barnabas's hands. He must need additional firepower of some kind if he's paying for more artifacts. He needs an edge over my father in some way, and is counting on us to deliver it.
Okay, I can fix this. I can save the day still. I take a deep, shuddering breath.
We're not ready,
Gwenna states in a firm, reasonable voice. She sits behind me, so I can't see her expression, but I know she's thinking the same thing I am. We can't help Barnabas. We just can't.
It's not like you'll be going in alone,
Magpie retorts. I glance up. Hawk's coming with us? She pauses.
A good idea, but no. He's going to be needed for more retrieval missions, most likely. Just today, another team got stuck in the ruins of an old temple, despite that area being off limits. Idiots.
Wait, he is? He mentioned the other Taurians had left the city due to the oncoming conquest moon. Why is he here with us if he's heading out on an emergency mission? I shoot a look over to him, but his face is impassive. Isn't that dangerous for him, too? The other Taurians are gone.
It's not a dangerous area. They're safe where they are. They just can't get out.
Magpie shrugs.
I'm training a retrieval team, too.
Hawk adds.
Since the Guild is realizing, it would help to have additional trained teams. Once they have their gear together, we're meeting at the drop station and heading in. Hopefully it won't take too long.
His expression is carefully blank, but I feel like he's annoyed at being on call. I can't say I blame him.
Don't you worry about Hawk,
Magpie says.
Just give his balls a good jiggle when he comes back.
Hawk clears his throat. My face heats. Must you be so crude?
Only if I'm awake, She smirks in my direction. And we all know you're giving his balls a jiggle, so it's not like this is a secret.
Kip makes a hissing noise, and I realize he's laughing. I scowl over at him.
So fucking pay attention in class,
Magpie says, leaning forward.
Because we're going into the tunnels in a little over a week, and you need all the information I can shove in your head.
Over a week? It's enough time to send a letter home. I need to warn Father, somehow, to let him know that Barnabas is going to make a move against Honori Hold. But mucking hells, I don't even know where Father is. Is he at court? At his mistress's home by the sea? At our hold? Do I send out anonymous letters to all those places and hope I catch him? It feels foolish, but what choice do I have? Not warning him seems even more foolish. I have to tell him something. Perhaps I can hint that Father has a friend here in Vast Warren who is looking out for his interests. I don't have to point out that it's me. He wouldn't recognize my handwriting anyhow. I contemplate what I'm going to write through the rest of the lessons, lost in thought. It's not like I need to know the shape of an urn that carries a particular spell, or what it means when a jar is found magically sealed, nothing good. I already know these things. I'm able to tune out, Magpie, and not feel too guilty. I've got bigger problems on my mind. By the end of the day, I'm feeling relatively good about the message I'm going to send. I have the perfect, concise statement ready, and I'm mentally going through the rooms in the barracks that might have stationery I can purloin. Then it's just a matter of getting it delivered. But when we arrive back at the dormitory, any thought I had of being in control goes out the window. There's a message waiting for me. The vellum envelope sealed with plain, unadorned wax. The others look at me curiously when I tuck it into my blouse and head to my room to read it in private. With trembling fingers, I open it and read the brief spatter of text.
Tomorrow night, King's Onion Tavern, midnight.
It's from Barnabas. Has to be. Somehow, he's figured out where I am. And I have to go. I don't have a choice. It's not until later that night that Hawk heads out with the retrieval team trainees, all of them wearing the black sashes of the repeaters. I wave goodbye from the doorway of the nest like a dutiful wife, but I'm glad he's gone. With Hawk out, it's going to be surprisingly easy to sneak away. I go to bed early the next night, pretending to be tired from a full day of sword work. Once I'm alone in the quarters I share with Hawk, I change out of my guild uniform into my darkest, most somber dress and cloak, slipping on my delicate boots. I don't know why I'm bothering to try to pretend like I'm not in the guild. Plausible deniability, I suppose. Either way, it feels safer to show up as Asbeth instead of Sparrow. After giving Squeaker's ears a good scratch, I open the door as quietly as possible, only to see a glaring Gwenna waiting on the other side. "What are you doing here?" I ask, dumbfounded. "Stopping you?" The look on her face could peel paint. "What do you think you're doing?" "Nothing." "Asbeth, you are a terrible liar. You're going out to meet Barnabas, aren't you?" I scoff. "No." She reaches out and plucks a tuft of orange fur from my cloak. "Pulling out our old clothes, sneaking away at midnight? Sure sounds to me like you're meeting him. How do you know he's even asked to meet me?" "I snuck in and read your note." "Gwenna!" "What? It's obvious you weren't going to tell me." She marches into my room and sits on the edge of the bed, her arms crossed as she glares at me. "So again, I'll ask, what do you think you're doing? Because going to meet him is incredibly stupid." "What other choice do I have?" She continues to give me a look of disbelief, so I explain. "He knows where I am and what I'm doing. If you think he's not going to use that information for his own purposes, you're being naive. I have to see what he wants, and what it'll take to keep him quiet. Gwenna purses her lips, hesitating. You know he doesn't want anything good. I know he doesn't, but again, what am I supposed to do? She sighs. I just don't like it, Asbeth. Me either. Gwenna stands up, and I think she's going to push me back into my room. Instead, she envelops me in a hug. Surprised and touched, I hug her back, feeling awkward, and yet somehow happy. I don't know what I would have done if I'd come here alone. Probably have given up a half dozen times already. She pats my back. Let me come with you, hmm? You can't. We both know you can't. I give her a squeeze of affection and then pull away. If I don't return, you have to tell the others what happened. If you come with me, we both could get in trouble. At least this way, you're safe. Yes, but you're going to go into the city alone after dark? That's dangerous, Asbeth. She's not wrong, but again, I don't have a choice. It's not as if I can ask Barnabas to meet somewhere more convenient. I'll wear my cloak and keep out of sight as much as possible. And don't forget, I've been practicing with a short sword. Gwenna stares at me, and then we both burst into laughter. We giggle until tears stream down our faces, because I'm absolutely rotten with a sword. Comically bad. I'm in far more danger of wounding those around me with my sword, to the point that Magpie has instructed me to use a club, and only a club. No sharp objects, especially not in confined spaces. Gwenna doesn't give up, though. Wiping tears from her face, she shakes her head again. Ask Kip to go with you. He's good with a sword, and no one will pay much attention to a slither skin. What if he says something to someone? I ask, worried. Kip? Please. He's the soul of discretion. She tugs me by the arm, pulling me into the hall as if it's already decided. Come on. Maybe she's right. We head down to the kitchen, Kip's favorite spot to tuck into his shell house and relax, and talk to him. A short time later, I'm out in the streets of Vast Warren, heading for the tavern with Kip keeping a careful distance ahead of me. He seems to know where he's going, which is good because it's dark and I can't see anything without my spectacles. I weighed the idea of wearing them, but it would ruin my disguise with Lark and the others, so I have to stagger around blindly in the darkness. It's all a blur of shadows, but I can keep my eye on Kip's pale shell that he shoulders as if it weighs nothing, and it makes it easy to track him. The night in the city seems dangerous, even though I know I can take care of myself, probably. I'm still a little alarmed at the crowded streets. Vast Warren's winding, crooked streets are packed with men of all ages after dark, most of them drunk and rowdy. Things are peaceful behind the guild's high wall at the center of the city, but here, in the common streets, it's a mess. Once you get away from the center of the city where the guild holds sway, the inns and shops all cluster together like people crowding and jockeying for space. If there's a finger-breadth of ground to be found, someone has built a booth on it and is selling wares. We pass an alley that's crowded with blankets and stolen goods laid out for buyers. Kip hurries past, but part of me wants to pause and look to see if there are artifacts being sold. Not that I have the funds, of course, but you never know. I've heard all kinds of stories about what can be found here in Vast Warren if one knows the right people to talk to, and I'm here to acquire artifacts to protect my home above all else. I need to remember that. It's a sobering thought. I speed up, clutching my cloak tighter to my body, and follow behind Kip as he winds through the crowds. Luckily, the cloak and the nasty, damp weather keep anyone from bothering me. I get few sideways looks from people who lose interest when I don't pause and just continue on my way. Then I see it. A wooden sign hangs out over the street from the balcony above, designed to move back and forth in the wind. It's hand-painted with a busty woman holding out a bright yellow goblet that pours round white shapes that must be onions of all things, like their liquid. The King's Onion is written in bold lettering at the top of the sign, large enough that even I can read it. Kip pauses directly underneath it and looks over at me, then at the tavern. A raucous crowd is inside, despite the fact that it's the middle of the night, and someone screams with laughter, only to be drowned out by more shouting. His expression is displeased as he eyes me. It's not my idea of a good place either, but I don't have a choice, I tell him as I come to his side. Thank you for the guidance. I wouldn't have made it here without you. He gestures at the wall and mimes leaning against it and waiting, then looks at me. No, you don't need to wait for me. Kip taps his heart and then gestures at his sword. Then he gives me a firm, emphatic nod. I'm pretty sure this is a we're a team sort of gesture, and it makes me feel warm inside. Even a quiet Slitherskin has my back. I know, I say softly, and I appreciate you, Kip, but I promise I'll be fine. He nods again and adjusts the straps on his shell house, then trots down the street heading home. I'm left alone in front of the raucous inn, and my gut churns with unease. I don't want to do this. I don't want to see Barnabas. I want to go home and sleep and not think about anything. I can't, though. My past is coming to fuck things up for me. I bite back a sigh of frustration. Nothing to do but move forward, get Barnabas out of my hair, and then move on with my life. Taking a deep, stealing breath, I exhale and step inside the tavern, lowering my hood as I do. The stink of sweat and humid air from so many people crowding into the place hits me like a wall, and I flinch. It's warm inside here, the fire merrily blazing in the large hearth at the far side of the inn, and every wooden table is crowded full of people. It smells like spilled ale as I move toward the crowded bar, looking for Barnabas. The wooden floors creak and groan as I wind my way through the busy cluster of people, and when I spot an empty section at the far end of the bar, I move toward it quickly. As I approach, a barmaid comes toward me. She could be my age, her smile bright despite the tired circles under her eyes and the many stains on the front of her apron that speak of a long day. Can I get you something, hun? I didn't bring any coin with me and want to kick myself. I'm waiting for someone. She fills a couple of mugs and slides them down the bar, eyeing me as she does. Alone? In a place like this? Everything all right? She leans in to wipe an imaginary spill, and her voice lowers. You need me to get the constable? I shake my head. Much as I would love that, I'm afraid I need to hear what he has to say. That's always the worst, isn't it? When you don't want to hear their shit and you have to anyhow. Old flame. Something like that. Been there. The barmaid shakes her head. Here, have a drink on me. She rinses out a stoneware mug and then fills it from one of the barrels behind her. Oh, I really couldn't. You're pale, hun. Take the drink. Think of it as free advertising. She finishes pouring and then shoves a wedge of white onion on the edge, like a garnish. An onion. A great big one, too. Thank you. I turn the mug, trying to figure out how to drink without touching the onion itself. Comes from the name of this place. She gestures behind her, where a basket perches atop another aging barrel. It's full to the brim of peeled white onions. And as I watch, One falls from above, joining its brethren in the basket. I look up and see a golden goblet, the selfsame goblet that was on the sign, turned upon its side. There's a foggy circle in the middle, and as I watch, it coalesces into another peeled onion, then rolls out of the cup and drops into the basket below. An artifact. Fancy. From the king, I suppose. The barmaid nods proudly. Owner here did a favor for the king once and was rewarded. Everyone comes here for the free onions with their beer. We have fried onions, too, if you're more into that. Pickled ones, too. Baked, breaded. I'm good, thanks. She offers me a wry smile and leans in again. Just between you and me, I'd avoid the privy, though. It's pretty rank and oniony. Ew, I wrinkle my nose and nod. Just then, I see a feathered purple hat bobbing as it moves through the crowd, and I know immediately who that is. Barnabas has always had a taste for the most ridiculous showy hats. I take a large gulp of my beer to brace myself, then grab the onion and take a huge chomp out of it, because fuck Barnabas. If he wants to talk to me or worse, I hope I reek of onions. Atta girl, the barmaid says. I nod at her, eating the onion like an apple, and get to my feet to approach my former betrothed. Is he going to be glad to see me, beg me to run away with him and leave this place? Or is he going to threaten me somehow? Knowing what I know now, that Father has no money and we've no artifacts left, it's tempting to consider leaving with Barnabas, to marry him and let Honori Hold become his problem. Let him figure out how to pay for the knights and their annual fees. Let him figure out how to get more artifacts. But I'm already married, so I can't do that. And even if I did, he'd probably murder me in our marriage bed once his claim on Honori Hold was secure. He wouldn't need me any longer, and a widower can marry again, of course. So no, marrying to solve my problems isn't the answer, much as I might entertain the idea for a brief shining moment. I chew on the last of the onion, hoping that my breath is fragrant and terrible, and raise a hand in the air to signal him. He can come to me, I decide, and not the other way around. So I sip my beer and watch as another magical onion rolls into the basket. The barmaid grabs it off the top, slices it into quarters with a deft knife, and then wedges them onto the rims of four more mugs and sends them flying down the counter. She knows her stuff, and I'm impressed. Then, Barnabas is standing in front of me, a look of regal horror on his face as he eyes my rumpled, damp clothing and my frizzy hair that's probably fallen completely out of its knot at my nape. I smile tightly at him, wondering if we're going to bother with a polite hug and cheek kiss of greeting, as all holders do. He moves toward me and, oh, I guess we are. Barnabas. I exhale as I say his name, brushing my cheek against his and making sure to get a lot of oniony air into my words. Barnabas recoils, gazing up and down at me.
My gods, Aspeth, look at you. How has it come to this? What are you doing in this cesspool of a city?
Come to what? I flutter my lashes and decide to play it stupid. And I'm just visiting friends. What are you doing here?
Visiting friends? In that? Hardly.
He flicks a hand at my clothing. It's creased from sitting in my trunk and covered in cat hair, and the colours are unflattering. But I didn't think it was that bad.
Are you actually working with the guild? In the dirt?
It's more a matter of excavating than digging in the dirt. And I haven't even gotten the chance to go excavating yet. Not that he needs to know that. You set up this meeting. What is it you want? The look of incredulousness on his face turns to one of sheer calculation.
I want to know why you're here. We were supposed to be married.
Is he still going on about that? I broke off the engagement months ago.
You're not in love with me, Barnabas. We both know this. So tell me what you want by dragging me here, because it's obvious you want something.
I want Hanori Hold.
His voice is soft.
It was in my grasp, and you took it from me.
It's not yours.
I'm a second son,
he continues. A mug with an onion decorating it is shoved in front of him by the barmaid, and he draws back with a look of disgust. He nudges it away from him and turns back to me.
My brother is ridiculously healthy, and his wife is pregnant. There's no chance I'll inherit my family's hold, so I want yours.
You can't have mine. Not that I want it much at the moment, but I'll be damned by all the gods if I just hand it over to this arse.
How did you even know I was here?
I didn't.
He leans back and studies me.
It's coincidence, really, but I saw your maid by the stream the other day. You two were as thick as thieves back at Hanori, so I had my men ask around. Everyone in the guild is quite eager to tell me all about the women who have fledged to Guildmaster Magpie and her Taurian brute.
I purse my lips, irritated.
You didn't even go by a false name, Aspeth, darling. It's as if you were begging to be caught.
I had one. They wouldn't let me use it, I mutter. He reaches for my hand on the bar.
We can ignore all of this. Come home with me.
Just as he touches me, I snatch my hand away. I'm not going anywhere with you, and we're not marrying. You're not getting Hanori Hold. Barnabas ignores me.
I won't even tell anyone that I found you here. We'll simply say you were overcome with passion for me, and we eloped. No one has to know the truth. Your family will be ruined if anyone finds out that you're here, pretending to be a guild stooge.
I bristle at that. He makes it seem as if I'm an idiot, that I have no idea what I've gotten myself into. I know, and have always known, that traveling without a chaperone isn't done for a holder's daughter. I know that coming to a rough city like Vast Warren makes it 10 times worse, because the reputation of this place is less than savory. The guild is considered a necessary evil by most holders, required but disliked. I know all this. I just don't care. Being a pristine, virginal holder's daughter with an impeccable reputation got me nowhere for the past 30 years. I haven't married, my father's hold is broke, our artifacts are gone, we're in danger of losing our lives if the truth comes out, and frankly, I'm tired of all of it. I'm here, in this rough, despicable city, preparing to do the dreaded manual labor of a guild member because I'm out of better choices. I'm finally doing what I want, what I need to do. And Barnabas is here, sticking his nose in and trying to ruin things. My anger rises, and I grab the onion from his mug and crunch down on it, not caring that I spray bits of white onion flesh everywhere. I hope he finds me disgusting. I'm not going to marry you.
Wrong.
He leans back, his expression downright smug, as if he has me trapped.
You marry me, and I'll keep your little secret about all of this. Otherwise, your reputation is destroyed.
I'm not going to marry you, I say again, calmly. He doesn't need to know that I can't, that I'm already married to someone else. Seeing him here has just cemented the fact that I would rather walk across broken glass than marry this jerk. To think that I once enjoyed his kisses. I try to imagine this selfish, self-absorbed boar tonguing me the way Hawk did, and the onions in my stomach churn.
Don't make me say it again.
Well then, enjoy hunting artifacts for me,
Barnabas says, voice light.
I've paid a lot of money to the guild to get everyone possible down there, scouting for artifacts, and they'll all come to my hands. They know I'm planning to go to war, to take down another hold. And do you think they care? No. All they care about is getting a commission, so I made sure it's an enormous one.
He smiles, all teeth, and leans back confidently.
You're of course welcome to commission teams on your father's behalf. It can be a race between us.
My nostrils flare as I seethe in silence. He knows I can't stop what he's put in motion. The guild is neutral when it comes to the squabbles and power plays of holders. They have to be. It doesn't matter who is fighting whom, just that the guild gets paid for the artifacts they retrieve.
So you should marry me,
Barnabas continues.
Marry me, and I won't tell everyone that I saw Lord Honori's spinster heir, Aspith, pretending to be a guild lackey, that she was slumming with commoners and thieves. Trust me, you want my silence.
My mind is racing. I can't even tell my father about this, can't warn him. If I get connected to the guild itself, father will show up and drag me home and marry me off to Barnabas anyhow, just to stop the oncoming bloodbath. A marriage, to me, stops everything. Which is why I threaten Barnabas instead of cowering. You're not going to tell anyone that I'm here.
Won't I?
No, you won't, I straighten. If you do, I'll marry someone else, the first holder I see, and make him the heir to Honori Hold. His face flushes with angry colour.
You wouldn't.
Oh, I would. There are other holders with sons who aren't married. What about Verleth from Morcell Hold? Meriden had mentioned her brother is courting another man, but I don't care. He seems nice enough, and he's not married. We don't have to be compatible, understand? We just have to be married for me to make him the heir. Barnabas leans in toward me.
You little bitch, listen here!
I slide out of my seat, moving away from him before he can grab at me. I'm playing a deadly game. There's nothing that would stop him from dragging me out of here with him tonight and hauling me in front of a priestess to marry me forcibly. I need to extricate myself, and quickly. I have to go. And just then, I see a huge, hawking, angry Taurian shape in the doorway, horns swinging back and forth as Hawk scans the room looking for me. Uh-oh. I'll be in touch, I tell Barnabas, and then race toward Hawk before he can see me with my axe.
23. Hawk, 13 days before the Conquest Moon. Not every retrieval mission goes smoothly, no matter how many skilled Taurians are sent. This one was a fucking nightmare. Everything that could go wrong did. The flags were in the wrong tunnel, and we had to backtrack once we realized it. The trainees were useless. The tunnel we actually needed was collapsed. Then when we dug them free, it turned out they had found a nest of ratlings. I'm covered in bites and bruises, and one of the idiots I was trying to save slashed me with his blade because he was waving it about so crazily. My shoulder throbs under the hasty bandage. My artificial hand aches as if to remind me that it worked doubly as hard as any real hand down in those tunnels. I'm tired, sore, and most of all fed up with humanity for a day. I want to go home and sleep and not think about anything until dawn. Maybe two dawns. I want to go home and roll over the innocent, nubile human woman in my bed, my wife, and lick her cunt until she squeals against my tongue. I want to jerk my cock to the scent of her bathing my muzzle. I want to drink in her soft cries and her panting. Let it soothe my irritations like a balm. That's what I want. I want to forget all guild business for at least a night and focus on plump thighs wrapped around my ears. Nothing would be finer. When I open the door to Magpie's, though, I'm surprised to see Gwenna in the hall. She sits in one of the chairs facing the fireplace, a blanket wrapped around her shoulders and a candle on the table next to her. She jumps to her feet at the sight of me, a worried look on her face. "What are you doing here?" I ask. "It's late and all students need to be in bed because drills start early." She hesitates and then sighs, shoulders slumping.
"Don't get mad."
My hackles rise. "And why would I be mad?" She smiles brightly, her expression brisk.
"Aspeth will be back very soon, any moment now."
Aspeth is out? At this time of night? I narrow my eyes at Gwenna, taking in the worried expression she's trying hard to hide. Why is Aspeth out, and where did she go?
"It's nothing."
I dump my mud-encrusted heavy pack on the ground and cross my arms over my equally dirty shirt. "If it's nothing, then why is it happening at midnight, and why are you waiting on her?" When she hesitates again, I continue. "If I wake up Magpie, is she going to be aware of this excursion?" The look on Gwenna's face becomes panicked. She clutches her blanket tighter around her shoulders.
"She had no choice."
"What do you mean?" I'm trying to keep the infamous Taurian temper in check, but it's growing more difficult by the moment. "Aspeth is somewhere out there in the city, alone, against her will, when she should be in my bed. It's the moon's influence on me that makes the last part growl through my mind. But nothing good can come of a lone woman being coerced out alone into the streets." "Who is she meeting, exactly?" Gwenna hesitates.
"An old friend."
"Who's blackmailing her into going out alone at night?" She hesitates again, and then falls silent. Whatever she knows, she doesn't want to speak of.
"You have to understand,"
Gwenna says after a long, long pause.
"No one has ever looked out for Aspeth. She's the one who thinks she has to protect everyone else. Tonight is no different."
"Who's she protecting?" I demand. Gwenna doesn't answer.
"Aspeth has never had anyone who cared for her. Not enough to look out for her. Not enough to say, 'No, Aspeth, that's a terrible idea. You can't meet a man at midnight.'"
So it's a man. Hot, possessive fury coils in my guts. Has she lied to me about everything? An old lover? Gwenna shakes her head again.
"I can't say more. I'm sorry. I can't betray Aspeth."
Her loyalty to her friend should please me, but it only heightens my frustration. I want to shake the answers out of her. Just shake her until the truth drops from her like leaves falling from a tree. But she's clearly doing what she thinks is best for Aspeth, and I can't hate that as much as I'd like to. Loyalty amongst the five should be praised. The last few days wouldn't have been such a shit show if the five we were rescuing had given a damn about one another.
"She always had everything growing up except people. Her father thought that wealth was more important than affection, and her mother died young. She doesn't have anyone except me."
"And me."
"And you,"
she adds, but her expression is clearly doubtful.
"As long as you don't murder her tonight."
I give her a tight smile. "I need my wife alive." She tugs on the blanket at her shoulders again.
"I know you don't understand, and I know I'm only giving you half-arsed answers, but just trust me when I say she's doing this because she thinks it's the right thing to do. I know Aspeth pretends like she has it all under control, but in her heart, she's a people pleaser. Just because she hasn't had anyone love her back doesn't mean she doesn't want to be loved. Do you see?"
I'm starting to. I've suspected all along that Aspeth was some rich merchant's headstrong daughter. A fuller picture is forming in my mind of a neglected daughter who had everything but affection, and the only one who cared for her is a maid who felt sorry for her. Whatever is going on tonight is tied to her past, something she feels she has to do in order to please or protect those she loves. I'm still fucking furious, but it's making sense. With a frustrated tug on my nose ring, I shake my head. Just tell me where she went and I'll retrieve her. A short time later, I'm stomping wearily through the streets of Vast Warren. At this time of night, there's nothing but troublemakers and drunks out. Luckily, they know not to mess with a Taurian on a mission. The scowl on my face probably could stop a parade in its tracks. I find the inn after wandering through a sketchy district and glaring up at each sign as I pass. The area isn't great, but what part of Vast Warren is? And I grow more and more annoyed by the moment that Aspeth thinks it's fine for her to wander around alone after dark with beggars and thieves. Foolish, foolish human female. Does she think she's invulnerable? Gwenna is loyal to her, but that only means she's helping Aspeth with her ridiculous schemes. I'm going to put a stop to this. I'm going to put Aspeth over my knee and paddle her bouncy, delightful bottom to teach her a lesson. But then I start thinking about smacking her arse, and how it would jiggle, and the noises she would make, and I bite back a groan. I can feel my knot rising, a ring of tightness at the base of my cock that feels like a vice. It's affecting my thoughts, because now I want to find Aspeth, not to punish her, but to pleasure her. Well, maybe a little fun punishment, too. Adjusting my cock, I glare at all the drunks loitering around the entrance of the bar. There are a few men off to one side wearing militia uniforms of some unimportant holder, but I ignore them. Every soldier needs to get his throat wet. I'm looking for Aspeth, and whoever had the poor judgment to blackmail her. My magical fist clenches, and I wonder idly which one hurts more when I throat punch someone, the real fist or the fake one. I step inside and scan the place, noting that there's only one other Taurian in the room, and he's by the fire with a human male in his lap. There aren't a lot of females of any race, either. I see a wench behind the bar, slicing onions, and other than that, nothing but human men as far as the eye can see. It's crowded in here, elbow to elbow, and I'm tempted to wade in and just start shoving people aside until I find Aspeth. If someone's harmed her...
Oh, look!
Calls out a bright, familiar voice.
You're just in time.
Then Aspeth is in front of me, her expression cheery as she pushes through the crowd. She's wearing her cloak over a dress, her hair is mussed, and her cheeks are flushed from the heat of the bar. Am I imagining things, or are her eyes shining with relief? She tucks her arm into the crook of mine and steers me toward the door.
It's late, and you're here to see me home, right?
I know what she's up to. She's leading me away from whoever it was that she met in this bar. I'm not an idiot. I ignore her tugs on my arm as she tries to drag me outside, pausing to look around at the crowded room again. Everyone is staring at us. But I don't know if it's because a human woman is leaving with a Taurian, or if there's something else at play. I wait for one man in particular to sack up, to separate himself from the crowd and announce that I can't leave with his woman. But after a moment, they all turn back to their drinks. No one's going to admit that they were here with Aspeth. I glance down at my wife's overbright smile and realize she's not going to tell me anything either. The urge to spank her grows stronger by the moment. Scowling, I go with her when she tugs on my arm this time. We're in the street and heading away from the tavern before Aspeth looks up at me.
You're growling.
Am I? It's probably because I hate this. I hate this place full of men who probably wouldn't think twice about groping my wife. I hate that she's put herself in this situation. I hate that no one's telling me anything, so I'm probably gonna growl for a while. Anyone would in my situation. You want to tell me what was going on in there? She blinks up at me.
Not really.
It just makes my temper flare. I jerk to a stop in the street and resist the second urge to shake a woman this night. I grab Aspeth by the shoulders tightly. You foolish woman. Why are you out here alone in the middle of the night? Don't you know it's not safe? Her expression grows uneasy.
I know.
Then why? Why? When she doesn't answer, my tail slaps against my thigh, as furious as I am. Why were you meeting a man out here? Her brows furrow together.
I didn't say I was meeting a man.
Why would you meet a woman at a pub in Vas Warren at midnight? I gesture back at the bar, furious, because I remember Gwenna's words about how Aspeth had no choice in the matter. Is someone blackmailing you? Another thought blisters through my mind and fills me with an incoherent rage. Did someone touch you? I might have to go back and murder everyone in the bar. There must be something unhinged in my gaze as she reaches up and pats my chest.
I'm fine, Hawk. Truly, I do appreciate your concern, but I promise you that no one has molested me. Everyone was